Hi, everybody. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford. He's Wes Hodkiewicz. We're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And Wes, Packers Cowboys, 93,000 plus at AT&T Stadium in Dallas. Call it epic, call it a classic, call it a game for the ages, any or all of the above. What a ball game.
Yeah, Mason Crosby called it a game for the ages afterwards. So many different layers to this, and I guess that's really been the beautiful thing about this whole now eight-game winning streak the Packers have been on. The amount of adversity they've overcome and the amount of really gut-churning moments. I told Jake Shum after the game, I talked to him a little bit following Mason Crosby's game-winning field goal, the longest in NFL postseason history from 51 yards out, to propel the Packers past the Cowboys. I said, I mean, if that's me, I would have been crying. I couldn't handle that pressure. But when you look at what Aaron Rodgers did to get the Packers down the field, Jared Cook making, as he said, the biggest catch of his career, and Mason Crosby in the last 1 minute and 33 seconds making three kicks, if you count the timeout, yeah, of more than 50 yards when he hadn't attempted more than two in the regular season. It was phenomenal.
Yeah, I can't say enough about what Mason Crosby did at the end of that game, and I know we have plenty to talk about as the show goes along and the week goes along, but I remember doing a story for the Packers yearbook 2 years ago after the NFC Championship in Seattle, where I focused on Crosby's 48-yard kick to at the very end of the fourth quarter to send that game to overtime as really the biggest kick of his career, right, that a lot of people are never going to remember because of obviously what happened in overtime in that game and how the Packers lost. And for him to go out there, a 56-yarder with a minute and a half to go, the longest postseason field goal in Packers history by 5 yards, and then a minute and a half later to go out and, as you said, two times hit a 51-yarder with the Cowboys using a timeout in there. Just an unbelievable finish and a veteran kicker that everybody on this team believes in.
Well, and again, it shows you why. I mean, them re-signing him last year, why that was so high on their list. It's tough to find kickers like that. And Mason Crosby now, believe it or not, actually has the NFL's longest consecutive games played streak right now, 160 consecutive regular season games. I think that's more than by 60 or 70 than,
oh, wow,
the next nearest kicker. One, because, you know, occasionally guys get hurt. Adam Vinatieri missed a game a couple years ago. And two, teams always shuffle their kickers so often. The Packers have always stayed with Crosby through his highs, through his lows, and he's responded to that. The thing that was interesting in the locker room, he said the 56-yarder was the most difficult of the three kicks because you know the situation there. You know that Dallas has a timeout left, that they would get the ball at their 46, and they have a pretty darn good kicker too, and Dan Bailey, as he proved with that 52-yarder that tied the game to force the game-winning field goal and the game-winning drive by the Packers. Crosby came up clutch in that situation, though, and he did it again with the game on the line. Cannot say enough about his disposition in that moment and just what it took to grind through that and get the Packers a really, really huge victory.
Yeah, and maybe the belief in Crosby is best exemplified by the 56-yarder,
yeah,
because of the risk that was involved there. You're in a tie game, a minute and a half to go. If that kick is missed, the Cowboys are basically 20 yards from getting a kick to take the lead themselves. The Cowboys never had the lead in this game except at 3-0, right, in the very early stages. So if the Cowboys had ever gotten the lead in the fourth quarter, you would have felt another complete swell of emotion and momentum within that stadium, the 93,000 plus. And Crosby just stood in there and striped it. I mean, it was I know it had, you know, kind of a strange trajectory and whatnot, but boy, the guy's got the leg. He kicked a 57-yarder down there 3 years ago, and I'm sure he was confident as heck with that 56-yarder.
Yeah, definitely, and the guys were confident. You know, Shum, the holder and the Packers punter, he said, and I asked him a little bit about this afterwards, that you could just look in his eyes, and you could see he's like, this is just another kick to me. I'm going to crush this, and we're going to advance. That was what they thought. When Bailey ends up making that field goal, 35 seconds are left, two timeouts, you have Aaron Rodgers as your quarterback. The three specialists with Brett Goode, the long snapper, they all agreed. I mean, this is going to come down to us. This is going to be up to us to win this game because they have the confidence that the offense is going to drive down, that Rodgers is going to get the necessary yards to make a manageable kick. And Crosby, as clutch as he was, as calm as he was, he said, I mean, the protection was perfect. The snap was perfect. Laces down. And Shum got it there for the hold, and, you know, the rest was history.
Yeah, well, you mentioned the drive with 35 seconds left to get the Packers in position. We've got plenty to talk about as far as that's concerned. We'll do that after the break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford here. Wes Hodkiewicz there. And Wes, you mentioned Dan Bailey's 52-yard field goal, 35 seconds left, ties up the ball game at 31 all. And the only thing going through Aaron Rodgers' mind at the time was, well, there's a little too much time left on the clock. The Cowboys didn't burn quite enough, and the Packers used every second to get the job done.
Yeah, that's one thing throughout this winning streak that they've been on. They've executed a lot in those two-minute drills and giving Mason Crosby opportunities to potentially make a kick like that, to whether it's the end of the first half or, as the Chicago game proved, you know, the 32-yarder as time expired to get them the win there against the Bears. And this is just another example of that. I thought Rodgers showed a lot of fortitude during that drive. I mean, I think he took a pretty big sack, still protects the football. They come back two plays later, third and 20. How many times have we seen them convert third and long during this during this recent run?
Yeah.
Jared Cook, the veteran tight end playing his first playoff appearance this season, comes across. He knew there was underneath coverage in front of him, came across the sideline. Rodgers puts a perfect ball there. He drags his toes, makes sure to hold on to that football so there's no, you know, left for doubt, room for error, holds on to it, pulls it down, and sets up with 3 seconds to go that game winner for Crosby.
Yeah, I'm not sure what you thought at the time that Cook caught it and the referee, the side judge there, signaled that it was a catch. I was kind of like, boy, are you kidding me? I couldn't believe that he would have gotten his feet in bounds. And then one look at the replay, yeah. It was like, wow, he actually, it was amazing. I mean, just an amazing display of footwork and concentration and everything to haul that pass in and capping off a heck of a big game for Jared Cook.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was funny, after the game, Richard Rodgers talked about that during a red zone drill in practice this past week. He made a very similar type catch, and everyone kind of praised him for it. They celebrated it. They go back in the film room a little bit later on. They see that his toe is actually on the sideline, and Rodgers said they gave him kind of a little bit of a hard time about that. This time he tucks those size 15 shoes in, and also just the presence of mind to make sure of where he is along the sideline, along the boundary. He gets the toes down first before his knee hits. I mean, because if the knee hits, then it's all for naught,
right,
if it's out of bounds. And a phenomenal play. Look at his performance overall, Mike. I mean, 6 catches for 104 yards and a touchdown early in the ballgame that helped spark them. Without Jordy Nelson, Jared Cook, and also, you know, Richard Rodgers really stepped up in his absence.
Yeah, for sure. Getting back to Rodgers, Aaron Rodgers for a second, I think to me the most impressive thing about the way that final drive unfolded was how Rodgers responded after that sack. That was a powerful blindside hit, yeah, from safety Jeff Heath. Rodgers never really got a chance to get his second hand on the ball. He never saw the guy coming from the blind side. It was a free blitzer who wasn't picked up. He took the hit, but somehow with just the one hand on the ball, he hangs on to it, has the presence of mind to roll over and call a timeout to save whatever few seconds that he could. And then on the next play, the Cowboys are coming with their pressure packages now. You know it. I mean, yeah. He knows they're coming after him. So he rolls to the right, tries to hit Cook again. The pass gets knocked away. But then on the next play, the call then is to roll to the left. You're trying to, you know, keep the Cowboys on the run defensively, not just sit there in the pocket where they're going to come at you with everything they've got. And just the way that whole thing was orchestrated after a hit that would have certainly knocked a lot of quarterbacks silly, and you just you kind of just get your bearings and go, okay, let's play for overtime, forget about this. Aaron Rodgers never had a single thought about overtime, no, even after taking that big hit.
Yeah, and I give credit to Rod Marinelli. I thought that was a great call. He actually sent – it was a double kind of safety cornerback blitz. There was pressure coming from the left side too, so it forces the pass protector to make a decision. I think it was Ty Montgomery on that play. So there's a lot of bodies coming in.
Yep.
They had tried early on a three-man rush with using Crawford as kind of a spy on Rodgers, and that really wasn't working. So that throughout the course of the game, they started sending more in five and six-man packages. And that's the thing, is when you do that, you're opening up your secondary, and Rodgers is so pinpoint precise at finding the open guy. And as you said, too, I mean, being able to roll right, roll left, going across his body, making that throw, there are only so many guys in the NFL can make that. He was asked afterwards if it was the best throw he ever made, and he kind of, you know, said quickly, no. I mean, there's been quite a few.
Yeah.
Certainly, as Mike McCarthy alluded to, the best throw of the day, and it couldn't have come with a better time.
Yeah, that's as clutch as it gets from a quarterback who really was having a pretty vintage Aaron Rodgers type day. When you look back to the first quarter, he's catching the Cowboys with 12 men on the field. Then he gets them in an offsides for a free play touchdown. You know, the Packers' offense is just rolling three straight touchdowns to start the ball game to give them the 21-3 lead. And then it was kind of hang on and see what you can do from there. I thought then coming out the start of the second half when the Packers got the ball, he was absolutely precise. 6 for 6, 75 yards, took the Packers right down the field for that touchdown to reestablish the 2-score lead. And then, you know, after that, we had all the drama in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, and he was surgical throughout, especially early on. And talk about not having Jordy Nelson and being in a hostile environment. I think that was really important for the Packers to be able to establish that early on, getting that momentum, getting out to an 18-point lead early on. And also, keep this in mind, too, they didn't have the benefit of the doubt with the field position this time. Dallas did a great job of defending against that, as did the Packers. So there was going to need to be a lot of long drives. I mean, you saw 80 yards, 93 yards. That's what it took to win this game. A few big plays along the way, but a lot of it was just really moving the chains and being aware of that marker.
Yeah, definitely. But with that, we've got to get to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford joined by Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, getting back to Aaron Rodgers for a moment, we did see his incredible streak of consecutive passes without an interception come to an end there in the third quarter in Dallas. It had gotten up to 318 passes, including regular season and postseason. He hadn't thrown an interception since the fourth quarter in Tennessee, Nashville, back in November. And Packers are driving there in the third quarter, a chance to make it a 3-score game after Micah Hyde made a tremendous interception at the goal line to take points off the board for the Cowboys, and just left that pass to Davante Adams a little too far inside. Jeff Heath, the safety, makes a nice diving catch coming across, and just another example, sort of the epitome of what this game was. What one team does, the other team was answering. Hyde gets the pick at the goal line. Heath takes points off the board for the Packers, and that was the type of back and forth ball game it was.
Yeah, definitely. And I know it's so funny because with Aaron Rodgers, 318 consecutive plays with our attempts without interception, remarkable. Still has a chance to break the franchise record, though, because it's only based on
regular season.
So he'll start 2017, I think. What is it going to be, about 20 or so behind Bart Starr's record? So.
Actually, close to 50, actually.
Closer to 50. That works, too. Yeah. I'm trying to remember it off the top of my head.
Yeah.
Whatever the case may be, I don't know if it's necessarily the worst thing, though. I actually think if you're a Packer fan, you probably feel good that he doesn't have to carry that streak down to the NFC title game. Got that out of the system and go from there. But give credit, though, to Rodgers during that. I mean, there was so many times during that streak where he could not throw an interception. The Packers could not turn the ball over. There just wasn't the room for it. And, you know, they were able to rally back after that one on Sunday night.
Yeah, the interception there by Heath, as I said, the Packers, it was looking like the Packers were going to go up 3 scores, which I think would have completely changed the complexion of the rest of the game, because that potentially takes Ezekiel Elliott out of it for the Cowboys, and they really have to focus on the pass. Then it can change the way Dom Capers wants to call defenses and whatnot. Give credit to Dak Prescott and Elliott, both of those guys, rookies playing in their first NFL postseason games. They were both outstanding without question. When I look at the Packers' defense, losing Morgan Burnett to the thigh injury early in the ball game was a tough blow. I know the Packers defense was on its heels and they were struggling there in the fourth quarter. When I look back at the entire game, there's a handful of plays that stick out. You had Micah Hyde breaking up that pass to Bryce Butler deep over the middle when he was kind of one-on-one there on a seam route. Hyde's interception, obviously, at the goal line that took points off the board. Joe Thomas had a nice pass breakup in the end zone on Jason Witten that forced the Cowboys to kick a field goal. Nick Perry's batted pass at the line of scrimmage.
And that was huge.
Late in the fourth quarter on third and three. Yeah. So I know this wasn't a great defensive performance by the Packers, but you can pick out those four or five plays that really, really were difference makers and helped the Packers always either stay in the lead or no worse than tied pretty much the whole way.
Yeah, absolutely, Mike. And I know you look at Ezekiel Elliott, 125 rushing yards. I think, to me, the biggest thing for him is that there was no carry more than 22 yards. You didn't allow him to break one for 40, 50, 60. That's when the game can really open up. They limited those big plays for the most part. I think you have to tip your cap to Ladarius Gunter. I know that's a tough matchup with Dez Bryant, but let's be honest here. The Packers haven't had a lot of options, and they got Demaryius Randall back after he ended up injuring his foot during practice on Saturday. Micah Hyde has been playing lights out in the slot, but they need Ladarius Gunter to be that shutdown boundary corner right now. That's just the way it is. He needs to face those top-flight guys, and I thought he battled in that game. As you said, I agree. Morgan Burnett's injury was huge for this defense. You're talking about one of your biggest veterans, one of your biggest leaders, and also arguably the most versatile guy on that defense. And you take him out of the equation and put in Kentrell Bryce. Bryce had a nice pass deflection, almost an interception.
Yeah, could have picked that one off in the end zone there. Yep.
Yeah, but him having to come in, Josh Hawkins, another undrafted rookie cornerback, having to play the slot position in the dime defense. So there was a lot of things the Packers had to overcome. But when they needed the big play late, when they needed to stop Dallas, they did that. Tip your cap to Bailey for making the field goal. But, I mean, I think that changes things. If they don't get that stop, and then Aaron Rodgers and the offense has to come down and try getting a touchdown to win it.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Well, before we go to a break, Wes, let's take care of some sponsor business. We all know that Green Bay fans are the most devoted fans in the league, and that takes a lot of energy. So grab a warm bowl of Campbell's Chunky Soup. Its meaty goodness fuels the greatness of Packers fans everywhere. Try the delicious chunky beef with country vegetables. Just visit your local supermarket retailer and ask for Campbell's Chunky Soup, the hearty way to fuel your game, and the official soup partner of the Green Bay Packers. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, looking ahead just briefly now to next Sunday afternoon at the Georgia Dome. The final game at the Georgia Dome will be Packers-Falcons for the NFC Championship. And a lot of storylines to watch as far as the injuries go this week. Jordy Nelson with his ribs, will he potentially be able to come back or not? Morgan Burnett with the quadricep injury. Devontae Adams left the Dallas game briefly with an ankle injury, came back in. David Bakhtiari left briefly at left tackle with a knee injury, came back in and finished the game. A lot of Packers trying to gut things out here on whatever health they have left. But the bottom line is the Packers are heading back to a place where they were just as banged up, maybe, if not more so, back on October 30th, and you know, won the game for 59 and a half minutes and then and just gave up the touchdown at the end to lose by 1 point.
Yeah, I mean, the exciting thing about this matchup, obviously, first off, there's a playoff history between these two teams and Matt Ryan and Aaron Rodgers. But secondly, I mean, arguably the two most high-potent offenses here, Atlanta for the entire season, number one in total offense, and in Matt Ryan, an MVP candidate with 117 passer rating this year, in Aaron Rodgers and what the Packers have done in the second half of the season. They end up finishing fourth in scoring, getting back into the top 10 in total offense this season after a down year in 2015. So that part of it's exciting. Atlanta has some big questions too as far as injuries are concerned. Now, Adrian Claiborne reportedly is going to be done for the year with a quad injury, and then also Vic Beasley is dealing with a shoulder injury that took him out a little bit, the NFL sack leader at 15 and a half sacks. So both sides, I mean, this is what happens this time of the year. You're going to have to deal with those things, and we'll see who responds to it. But I think if you're looking for an excitement standpoint, I don't think you could look for a better offensive matchup than these two teams.
Yeah, I think we're in for a shootout more likely than not based on the defensive numbers, the offensive numbers, and all of that. From the Falcons' perspective, they've got some playoff demons to exercise, you might say. Not just the Packers going down there in 2010 when the Falcons were the number one seed and Green Bay blowing them out, But 4 years ago, the Falcons were hosting the NFC Championship against the San Francisco 49ers, had a 17-0 lead in the first half, let it get away, and did not get that Super Bowl berth at that time. Matt Ryan probably remembers that game. That one probably sticks with him maybe more than any other in his career in terms of disappointments. And he's going to have the home crowd behind him to try to get back to another, get the Falcons back to another Super Bowl.
Yeah, I think, you know, Ryan's probably wearing that crown right now of the best quarterback to not, let alone win a Super Bowl, but to appear in a Super Bowl yet.
Yeah.
This year had a career season. Julio Jones, although he's been dealing with some injuries off and on here down the stretch, you know, really making a case for being the top receiver in the NFL now that Calvin Johnson's not here, if he hasn't already been in that category. Those two guys have been the bread and butter for this offense, and also really sneakily talented running game. So those are all things I'm sure we'll touch on later this week. But I just think when you look at Ryan, the performance they had against Seattle, the way they dominated that game, one of the top defenses in the NFL perennially, it was impressive.
Yeah. For the Packers, going back to the NFC Championship game for the second time in 3 years, for the third time with Aaron Rodgers as quarterback, and for the fourth time in Mike McCarthy's 11 seasons as head coach. But boy, McCarthy talks all the time about how every season is different, every path is different. You look at this, to go from 4-6 to one of the last four teams in the league standing, it's just remarkable where this Packers team is right now.
Well, and I think that was kind of his message in his post-game news conference. I would have to imagine it was kind of relayed to the team, too, during their locker room conversation is, you know, they're two games away now from achieving greatness.
Yep.
When you are 4-6, this is, and Brian Bulaga, a number of guys talked about this in the locker room, regular season doesn't matter anymore. It doesn't really matter how they got there. They're in the dance, and now they've won two games to put themselves in the final four for that Super Bowl championship. That's it. That's all you got to focus on.
Yeah, sounds good to me. Well, with that, we'll call it a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, he's at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford, at Packers for the team account. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time.